This program is sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.
This radio program is PG-13. Parents strongly caution some material may be inappropriate for children under the age of 13. Send me free of the chains holding me.
Is anybody out there hearing me? Set me free.
Jesus' mission was to comfort those who mourn, bind up the brokenhearted, proclaim liberty to captives, and open prison doors for those who are bound. For those who want more than status quo Christianity has to offer, Blazing Grace Radio begins now. And here is your host, Mike Janung.
Hey, Mike Janung here. Welcome back to Blazing Grace Radio. Thank you for joining us on this battlefield we call life. And as I've been sharing in recent shows, and actually from inception for years, that the porn epidemic in the church continues to grow. More and more people continue to struggle in these areas. And so I'm blessed when I be able to have some guests come on to share their struggles so you can see you're not alone. And there are other people who are going through what you are. And this week and next week, I'm blessed to have Joshua Inman with us. He was born and raised in Washington State in a Christian home, and after high school, he helped plant a church in Southeast Asia with Youth with a Mission. He eventually moved to Nashville, Tennessee, where he currently lives and is a former music industry professional working with some of the biggest names in Christian and country music. He has struggled with homosexuality and even went to a residential live-in program for those with unwanted same-sex attractions. His autobiography will be released early next year, and I interviewed his twin brother, Steve, a couple months ago. So, Joshua, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. I'm honored to be here.
So let's kick this off and start getting into your story.
Okay, so I was born and raised outside of Seattle, Washington. I was born into a Christian home. My parents were newly saved a couple of years before I was born. And so I spent my life in church, basically, initially in Calvary Chapel, and then we ended up going over to the Vineyard. But the Vineyard is what I remember the most. And so I claim the Vineyard. So I had a sense of God from a very early age, and I could feel his presence tangibly during worship. And my parents had a very close-knit circle of friends that we hung out with. We were kind of like a community of like-minded believers. We were in and out of each other's homes. They were more like siblings or cousins than friends. And the two couples that had kids my age had girls. And so my twin brother and I played with them, played with dolls and dressed up and stuff. My mom was telling us that she felt like we started really wanting to regularly dress up as girls at the age of 3 or 4. And at first she allowed it because she thought it's really common for kids to be, curious about clothes of the opposite sex. But once she started to realize it went beyond the normal curiosity, she tried to encourage other forms of play that no longer involved dressing up. But my twin brother and I would dress up when she wasn't around. And then the other loophole I found was dressing up like a Bible character because it was the closest to a dress I could get away with. And so I became fascinated with the Middle East and the clothing and, you know, culture and stuff. But anyway, my dad was a lot more passive. My twin brother and I really connected strongly with my mom and we bonded with her. My dad, he kind of waited for us kids to kind of seek him out. And because my twin brother and I were closer to mom, Steve and I just didn't really seek him out. So we didn't have that strong bond with him. We got baptized and saved at the Vineyard Church probably in the late 80s. And then in 1988, we were blindsided when my father left us for another family. He started working over in the Seattle area, and he met this lady, and I just remember him basically being, I don't remember specifically how it happened, but it's basically we were told, you know, he's moving out and not going to live with us anymore. And at first I was like, you know, that's because I didn't have that close relationship with him. I was thinking, oh, I wonder what life's going to be like without him. But what I didn't know was that I had shut down emotionally. And so I was trying to do self-protection mode. And my younger siblings were just torn apart by it, and they bawled their eyes out. And he'd left for a time and then second-guessed his decision and came back for a short period of time. But ultimately, he left for good. Backtracking a little bit, when
How old were you when this happened?
It was in 1988. I was 12, 13, somewhere in there. Mm. Backtracking a little bit, my mom tried to homeschool us kids for a time, but she quickly realized she couldn't homeschool five kids at different levels of learning and still maintain a house. And so we were ultimately put into public school. I didn't know how to read at the time, and so I just needed constant supervision and help. And so I was put into third grade, and I was a year behind my age group. I had kind of a cognitive learning disability, which I eventually grew out of, but it made reading written information more difficult to process. I was better if someone told it to me versus me reading it. And so I was put into special education for math and reading. And because I was so effeminate, Stephen and I got picked on in elementary school. Looking back as an adult, I realized it wasn't everybody, but it just felt like everybody thought I was a girl. And so I tried to reach out to the boys and do stuff with them, but they just made it very clear I didn't measure up. And it was in elementary school. Stephen and I were like this really close. He'd said in his episode that we were like built-in best friends, which we were. And he started to pull away, kind of wanting his own identity, which caused me a little bit of rejection. But it was just a very confusing time, because up until then, we were we were in a pretty close, safe environment for the most part.
Let me ask you, you said the boys made it clear you didn't measure up. What did that look like?
Well, they called me a sissy and a girl. And, you know, there was one time I tried to sit at the lunch table with the boys, and they just made some vulgar jokes at me. And so then I went back and sat with the girls and never tried to sit with the boys again. And I just felt like it was strong rejection. There were times when, like, there was a time back in the 80s in Washington, where I grew up, we had a field day in elementary school one day a year, where like half the day was spent doing field activities. And the teacher had dismissed the girls to go change. And me being a worrier, I raised my hand and asked, well, can I go change? And the teacher said sarcastically, well, are you a girl? And all the boys said, yes. Mm. And, you know, stuff like that. And I couldn't measure up in sports. I was not athletically inclined. And so I was always the last one picked for sports stuff. And no one really wanted me on their team. And I just kind of stayed away on the sidelines and just kind of stayed out of everyone's way. But so it was very clear to me that I was not measuring up. And as much as I tried to reach out to the bullies and stuff, they just, like one bully, I said to him at one point, I said, you know, I've tried and tried to be your friend. And you, I said, why are you so mean to me? And he said, because I don't want to be your friend. And I was just shocked that, you know, people could be mean just to be mean for no other reason. So, because that's not how I was trained. My parents taught us to treat people the way we wanted to be treated. So it was all very confusing, and we would come home and complain to mom, and she said, you know, maybe God's allowing this because he's going to use you to minister to other people who've gone through similar situations. And as we know from Stephen's episode, he interpreted that to be God's doing this to me, where to me it gave me hope that maybe God could take all this stuff and turn it around. So we, at our house, Christianity was not just a Sunday morning exercise. We had regularly family devotions every night. And I felt like I had this special connection to God, where Stephen was getting angry and shutting down, so he didn't have the same connection that I had. And it was very obvious to me, I don't know about him, but I could see that I was like, it just felt like the special connection. So then...
let me ask you for a moment. You talked about your dad walking away from the family. Was he involved in family devotions in your church?
Well, yeah, he was up until right before he left. We did do family devotions. He played the guitar and he would sing sometimes in our church worship band and stuff and the choir, I guess. And not that we really had a choir, but sometimes we had a section of singers and he would sing sometimes. So he would play the guitar and mom would teach some kind of lesson out of a kid's Bible study book or something. So he was regularly involved. When he started, around the time he started working in that Seattle area and where he met my soon to be stepmom, he was a lot busier and he didn't have the time he used to. And as we got busier with school and other things, you know, those family devotions, that was especially in the early days. We still did do some devotions and have family meetings and stuff, but it over time, they kind of dropped off as life got busier, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't really fit in, and because I was so effeminate, I didn't really fit in church as much. I mean, like Stephen said in his episode, we did live 30 minutes from our church, so we really couldn't do a lot of regular stuff. We would go on Wednesday nights for church and then Sunday mornings, but that was it. We didn't do any Bible study. We didn't do youth group, but still, you know, I just hung out with the girls because that's where I was safer, or adults, because adults tended to be safer and they tended to be more accepting. And so I can remember sitting on the playground at elementary school and asking God, why didn't you make me a girl? Because it would have made life so much easier. And I felt like I was sitting on this fence with one foot on the female side and one foot on the male side, not really belonging anywhere. And I knew I wasn't a girl, but I didn't really feel like a boy. The guys made it clear I didn't measure up. And so I just felt stuck in this in-between, not really knowing where I fit in. And then Dad left in the late 80s. And then I go to junior high in 1990, and where it seemed like being gay was the worst possible thing a person could be. And the students made it very clear that I didn't measure up, just like they did in elementary school. I couldn't walk right. I couldn't talk right. I couldn't do push-ups right. The worst bullying took place in the locker room. And in junior high, we had to take showers after our PE activities. And so they obviously could see I wasn't a girl. And so they started calling me a fag and a sissy and a queer. And there was lots of threats to beat me up, although I never got physically touched. There was lots of threats. And I'm a more soft-spoken, sensitive person. So my only defense was to just quietly endure. I did not have any fight in me. I was afraid of fighting. I was afraid of getting beat up and the pain of it. And so I just tried to be as invisible as possible and make it from one class to another undetected. And it was just really a hard, difficult time during junior high. But during that time period, my mom got my siblings and I in Youth with a Mission's King's Kids program, which they started in my hometown. And typical King's Kids programs are just a summer activity where kids get together, they have some teaching, they learn some choreographed dances and skits, and then they go to some outreach either in the country or outside of the country and present what they learned. But ours decided to do a year-round thing. So once a month, we would get together and have a weekend get together where we would have teaching, we would have worship, they would teach us dances, and then we'd have some kind of outreach, whether it was on the streets of Seattle or in a mall or a convalescent home or a church or something. And God really grounded me through that experience. There were three ladies especially who took me kind of under their wing, and I can remember there were times that everyone else would go to bed and they would they would talk with me, they would pray with me. Mm. And I just felt they were pouring into me. And there were kids at the King's Kids who picked on me. And it was really a difficult time because I just didn't feel I fit anywhere. I felt like a misfit. And in junior high school, Stephen was becoming more and more angry. And he would, on our walks home from school, he would, while we still played together and did things at home, on the walks to and from school, or on the walks home from school, he would unload all his anger on me. And he would repeat all the stuff he heard about me from the other students. And he made it clear to me that I was an embarrassment to him. And he was just angry. And but God's presence, because I had the experiences I had in the vineyard growing up, I knew God was real. And while there was a lot I didn't understand, his presence was so strong to me in those early, or in those dark days. And I can remember standing in line waiting to go to the PE where I knew I was going to get bullied, that his presence was so strong. I just wished everyone could experience his love. And so he grounded me at such an early age that I never had to question whether he was real. And so,
what did some of those experiences look like in the vineyard?
Well, I don't remember anything specifically. I just remember it was a feeling, like I could sense his presence. Like the worship was so strong, and there were times when the presence of God would fall in there, and they wouldn't even do a sermon. They would just have worship the entire time. And I just loved those times. And it just was a very, I don't know how to put it into words except for that it was tangible in the room is all I know how to say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people were regularly slain in the spirit. There were weekly healings, you know, stuff like that. So it actually, when Stephen and I got, when we accepted Jesus, I thought I expected to feel something, to have some kind of outward manifestation because I'd seen that growing up. And when nothing happened, I'm like, did that really work? Cause you know, it's like, I'm not feeling anything. So, but anyway, so then somewhere along the line, my dad moved, him and my stepmom got married. They moved to Colorado, so we didn't see them much. We would go over to their house before they moved. We'd go over to their house on weekend visits, but there were times dad wouldn't come and get us for his weekend visits. And he remembers us not wanting to go over at times, but I don't remember that. I just remember there were times he didn't come to get us. And I know my brothers were upset when he didn't show up for ball games or different things like that. But my stepmom was nothing like my mom and nothing like my dad. She was very, she'd had a hard life. She was very broken. And I, as a child, didn't understand that. And I learned it was not safe to bring up things about the divorce or talk about things in her presence because she could fly off the handle at a drop of a hat. And it was very, I felt like I walked on eggshells because you didn't know what would set her off or when she would get set off. And it was a really hard time. And then in between junior high and high school, my mom ended up marrying a man after she was single for about 6 years. She married a man who she met through our King's Kids program. And none of us were prepared for what that was going to entail. And he was just like my stepmom, except he was a Christian, and he could fly at the rage in the drop of a hat, and you never knew what was going to set him off, and so he blindsided me a lot. And I was going into high school. Stephen didn't want anything to do with him, so then that's when he moved to Colorado to live with my dad, and so then that's kind of where our living together stopped. And then my stepdad came in, and he kind of ruled the house with an iron fist. In some respects, at least that's my perception. And my mom was codependent. I was codependent on her. I couldn't have put those into words, but that's how I, as an adult, could say. We had a very unhealthy relationship, very dysfunctional family, it just broken. And he did not realize, none of us realized what it was going to entail moving in together and having this blended family. And he brought his daughter in that he shared custody with his wife. And so she would come for different visits. And it was just a very difficult time. I was past the point of wanting a father figure. I was going into high school. I didn't want anyone telling me what to do. And so he and I clashed big time. And by the time I got to high school, the bullying had pretty much stopped by that point. I still was picked on by a handful of people, but for the most part, most of the bullies seemed to either grow up or not care anymore. And so for the most part, I could walk the school halls feeling free, and I wasn't afraid of the bullying like I was before, and I didn't have to watch my back all the time. And so
let me ask you, so during this time, the stepdad and your mom, are you all going to church?
We are.
So does it feel like you're all kind of putting on an act, or what was that like?
No, I mean, so I wasn't very perceptive back then. So I only can tell from my perspective was, you know, I was just really struggling. I was, it was in junior high that my sexual attractions to other guys came out. And so then here's this whole nother layer of stuff that separates me from the other guys. And so I was starting to be tempted, like not tempted, but like attracted to the guys in the shower rooms in junior high, which terrified me. In fact, twice in that school, the 3-year period in my junior high, there was a rumor spread around the school that I had gotten an erection in the locker room. And so I was famous in that school for not a good way. And I, in fact, Stephen, on one of those walks home, he's the one who told me about it because I had no clue. I was oblivious to any of it. And he told me about the rumors that were spreading around. And we weren't regularly in school, but when after Dad left, right before Mom married Mark from the King's Kids program, we ended up transitioning out of the Vineyard, and we started attending a church just temporarily in our hometown where the church that my King's Kids would meet at for our monthly get-togethers. And then when Mom married Mark, we started going to his Foursquare church. And so I did go to youth group a little bit at that church where we were at in my hometown before we ended up going to the Foursquare church. And I did go to youth group in the Foursquare church. And so we were regularly in church. I did go to youth group. I don't remember how often, but I did. I was also volunteering at a local Christian coffee house within walking distance from my house. I did that for several years. So we were regularly in church. So it was just very difficult. The turmoil switched from outside the house to inside the house. So I pretty much relegated myself a big portion of the time to my room, where I got lost in music and I would listen to music for hours because it was my escape. When I got into high school, I felt like God wanted me to continue with King's Kids, but I didn't want to. I wanted to get involved in theater. So I started I quit King's Kids and started getting involved in theater at school. But I quickly realized that acting was not my thing, but I still enjoyed what I could do. So then right out of high school, on one of my King's Kids outreaches that I did was to the Philippines. And so I'd met other YWAM people in the Philippines that I kept in contact with. And they recommended that I came over to the Philippines and did this discipleship training school with YWAM. And so right out of high school, I graduated in, where did I graduate? I graduated in June, and then the following January, I moved to the Philippines to do this discipleship training school. And I didn't know where I would go. I didn't know what God had for me. I just knew that I was supposed to go to the Philippines. And so I did.
So let's tie this up for a minute. And what I'm hearing here is the big hole in your life is the absence of your father. So can you
absolutely
take about 60 seconds and speak to that?
Yeah, I did have a hole as a father. There were people in the church that did try to father me, but I didn't have a connection to them because I was closer to women and that was my safe place. And so I really didn't have that connection. We didn't have a lot of uncles and things that were really in our family that we regularly did with. It was all women. And so women were really my safe place, and the people that I hung out with, that's where I felt safest. And so that's what I sought out, because it just wasn't, men weren't safe, or they just weren't around.
And 20 seconds, what would you say to the guy who, or the woman who struggles with same unwanted same-sex attraction today?
What I would say is don't seek God, press into God, no matter how you feel, because the devil will lie to you and tell you that you're unacceptable, but that's a lie. And God loves us more than anything you can imagine.
All right, thank you.
And he's not scared from same-sex attraction.
Yep. Well, thank you, Joshua. And my friends, we will continue this conversation next week. So we'll talk to you next time.
Do you want to be free?
Blazing Grace is a nonprofit international ministry for the sexually broken and the spouse. Please visit us at blazinggrace.org for information on Mike Janung's books, groups, counseling, or to have Mike speak at your organization. You can email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call our office in Chandler, Arizona at 719-888-5144. Again, visit us at blazinggrace.org. Email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call the office at 719-888-5144.
This program was sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.